Good afternoon. Today is Monday. Boy, February the 11th.
Time flies when you're having fun.
I guess so. I'll let you know when I'm having fun. 42nd day of the new year. Joining us this afternoon, Humboldt County Superintendent of Schools, Gary Eagles.
Hey, it is great to be back with you on this sunny Monday.
Yeah, isn't it fun to have a sunny Monday?
It is. It's a great way to start a week.
Nice. Yeah, I think everybody. When do you get into work, roughly-ish?
7 in the morning.
Was there, like, nobody on the road when you drove in this morning? I mean, like, weird nobody on the road?
Well, come to think of it, there wasn't too many. That's true.
Well, I came in this morning, too. It was like, who shot? What?
You think it was a holiday somewhere, right?
I thought it was. I was taking it personal that everybody was avoiding me. I mean, it was that scary. You know, normally there's a couple of the coffee shop places that I'll drive by, and you can't find a spot for, like, a 2 blocks. So I'm drive by, and I just kind of, you know. There's like 1 car this morning.
Wow.
Yeah. On a couple of the major thoroughfares, it was like nobody.
Maybe they had a rough weekend. Who knows? Getting off to a slow start.
Yeah. That dreaded February 9th weekend. Oh, geez. So how do you want to talk about here?
Well, we're going to talk a little bit more about that state budget and some of the vision that Governor has.
Divisions that he has.
Well,
yeah, all over the place.
He's got some interesting
ideas. Some of us call
them
canyons and chasms.
And visions? Okay.
Yeah.
Moonbeam, Governor Brown is back.
There we go. Okay, so we'll talk about some of the interesting perspectives at the state budget level when we come back.
At my bank, I feel at home. I'm Trish Greggie of the Journey's End, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
At my bank, hometown banking isn't just something they say, it's how they do business. I'm Kevin McClendon of Georgia's Glass, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
At my bank, we invest in the future of our community every single day. I'm Greg Foster, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
Redwood Capital Bank, our interest is you. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times, 313. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Gary Eagles. But before we do, our quote this afternoon comes from Abraham Lincoln. Quote, "There are few things wholly evil or wholly good." That would be W-H, not H-O-L-Y. I mean, with the Pope's
announcement today.
Which I think is kind of cool.
But
it's interesting how it's playing out.
It's a change of pace for those of us that weren't around 400 years ago the last time it happened.
Six.
Or was it six? Oh.
1400.
It was several centuries. That was it. Okay.
Yeah, it was before me, too. I'll have to wait and see how it shakes, huh? Yeah. There are few things wholly evil or wholly good. Almost everything, especially of government policy, is an inseparable compound of the two, so that our best judgment of the preponderance between them is continually demanded.
And I think
took him a long time to get around to that one. You know, Gettysburg was so much shorter than that.
It was a lot shorter. But, you know, the bottom line is very much true then as I guess it is today, continues to today, as we look at what's happening at all levels of government.
As you see the state budget, yeah, I'm sure that you're like a laser in the educational area.
Well, we have to. We're so dependent on it.
Okay. But you're kind of like a flint knife out in the other areas, right? Okay, I mean, kind of getting a sense.
Yeah.
Did you see anything overall with this would-be document that says they got an idea what's going on, or, oh, no, here we go again, another train wreck?
No, I'll tell you what I found in this particular budget design, at least with regard to education, is that the governor came out with a philosophy and an approach, and that philosophy is actually consistent. And as I'm pulling on the detail, you know, the budget trailer bill itself just for education is over 160 pages long. We're making our way through it. It's exactly what it says, doesn't say. And, you know, his quick budget briefing of a few weeks ago is truly at the 40,000-foot level. The budget trailer bill is where the action is. You know, this is this detail and that detail. But I can tell you that while I am not 100% in agreement with the whole plan, I can tell you the plan is thorough, it's integrated, and the people behind the scenes went to a lot of trouble to try to get it as right as they possibly could and truly consistent with what they said. So I guess what I'm saying to you is that even though I have concerns about the application of a couple of areas. Overall, the program has integrity and is consistent in what the governor is trying to do, which is truly increase local control. It isn't just words. He's actually got a plan to implement that.
Is it fiction or nonfiction?
No, I actually think it's very doable. And one of the things that gives me that clue is one of the sections that talks about not only local control over decision making, but also local control and accountability over quality of program, is the fact that he has aligned the hearing on the budget at every school district with also a hearing on the local plan on how the budget is going to support student academic achievement. And then he goes down so far in the detail to say that those hearings cannot take place on the same day as the budget is adopted, that you actually have to schedule a separate meeting. So in other words, there's got to be a lot of contemplation between the plan,
right? Yeah,
that makes sense. You know, the horse is not in front of the cart kind of a thing. This is actually very logical to tie solid accountability plans and public hearings on both measures, both the plan and the budget strategy, and then the budget to be adopted at the subsequent meeting.
Well, let me lob a quick one out at you then. I'm just trying to look at the clock here. Okay. Good. We got enough time for a quick one. Ah, we got mucho time.
That's what happens when the clock gets closer.
Yeah, I can read it finally. Mike Downey was in on Thursday, and he said, okay, fine, but it looks to him like they're expecting an economic recovery, sales tax revenues going up.
Yes.
And with, and I guess, was it the New York Times, I think Thursday, front page article, California, top wage earners now pay 52% in income tax. Those people being sedentary enough, loyal enough, whatever enough to stay in the state, and that they won't be continuing to leave the state. So Mike was saying, sales tax revenues, really? Personal income payers, really? But everything is based on those.
Yes, the overall tax structure for the state of California is still the same that it always was, and that is it relies very heavily on personal income and the highest wage earners in the state of wage. I don't know if you could call capital gains wage earners, but the highest earners, I'll put it, in the state to help float a sizable portion of the state budget. And oddly enough, the allegation has been made over time that a lot of those high income wage earners are leaving. Actually, the data shows that that's not true. Matter of fact, even though the governor's budget projection or budget plan came out in mid-January, and there were no numbers, financial numbers, coming out of the last quarter until 2 weeks afterwards, actually, he was being conservative. The numbers that actually reported out of January were higher, significantly higher, almost all the way across the board.
So you're feeling okay with this?
Actually, yes. I am, oddly enough. And I haven't been positive about the state budget economic indicators for a very long time, Brian, as you know. And I tend to be very conservative myself. But when I pull apart the numbers, whether it's capital gains, whether it's sales tax, whether it's corporate taxes and the like, yes. Now, part of the gain in January was the assertion that people were paying December payments early, right? Paying them in December rather than waiting until January. And I think that may have been part of it. But no, I think there is an uptick in the general economy of the state.
KINS, News and Information Time. It's 3:19. We'll be back with more from Gary Eagles.
Now a minute of sunshine for Humboldt. If you have a dog or plan to add one to your family, you'll want to know about the Humboldt Dog Obedience Group, or HumDog for short. HumDog, a nonprofit organization, began in 1978 and is run by 50 volunteers. Its purpose is to teach dogs good citizenship. HumDog conducts classes nearly every Monday evening throughout the year at Redwood Acres. There are puppy training classes, basic training for dogs over 6 months old, and more advanced classes. The modest fees are used to pay the rent and professional trainers. Each session lasts an hour. HumDog also puts on two annual events, the Dog Expo in March and the Dog Agility Trial in August. Both draw crowds of dog lovers. For those who apply for funds to spay or neuter their dog, HumDog has a special fund that may be able to help. See their website, www.humdog.org. Sunshine for Humboldt is a nonprofit civic association dedicated to the people and places that make this a good place to live.
Good afternoon, KINS. News and Information Times, 324. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Gary Eagles. Gary, looking at the state budget overall, you said that you feel fairly confident with this one. As it's presented today, as you're plowing through the, would you say 160-something pages?
Yes.
Yeah.
They call that the trailer bill.
Yeah, I would give it a different name, but that's all right.
And that's just in K-12 education. That's not in any other part of the budget bill.
So you can imagine how crazy this thing must be.
Yes.
How do you get to the point where you're not being numb and you're able to actually see it in your guys so that when you get together and go, here's what I got out of it. Well, here's what I got out of it.
Well, that's actually what we do.
So that you are on the same wavelength, yes, and everybody's thinking kind of the same thing.
Well, we do have a team that looks at it here locally, but we also connect at the statewide level. In fact, Rick Hanger, the Assistant Super for Business Services in the county office, was down in Sacramento just last week, at the end of last week, for meeting with other statewide county business officials, representatives of the Department of Finance, and some special advocate groups, School Services of California, California School Boards Association reps and the like, pulling on it from their point of view. And he told me today when he came back, he said, you know, it's pretty well uniform out there that people think the governor is going to get his way on this new way of funding education, that it still may be subject to a few tweaks here and there, but that people feel that it does, on balance, provide local school boards and their communities the opportunity to design and operate schools more responsive to community needs and less dictates to Sacramento. You know, we were talking about integrity before with his words of local control that he talks about, but is it really on the ground? And I said it had a lot of integrity because it's a plan that holds water. Another example of that is, he wants every school and school district to have a plan to improve the education of its targeted students. And that plan, as I spoke earlier, is to be adopted after its full vetting with the public. But he also says that plan should not contain any extraneous state requirements, much beyond what the feds require now. And in fact, there's a specific section in the proposed law that says the State Board of Education, who has to develop a template for this plan development, that they're not supposed to add anything extra, that it's really supposed to be up to the local school districts to decide how they serve their economic disadvantaged, their English as a second language learners, their foster youth, as well as prepare kids for college and career readiness. So
why don't they just get you a check? Say, handle it. I mean, that's kind of sounds what they're intimating they're
doing.
Yes,
but I'll tell you, we are still a statewide system. And as such, I do think there is a role for the state government to decide the what. In other words, to say that they want all school districts to adopt a similar standards of achievement for their schools, that they're going to hold them accountable for working towards accomplishing those standards. I think that's a state role. Because there does need, I think, some continuity between one area of the state and another. Also, I think the state's responsible for adequately funding education and for seeing to it that poorer communities are equitably supported in comparison to their richer counterparts. With that said, then I think it's up to the locals to decide the how. And that's really where the governor is really trying to give as much flexibility as possible. But not only flexibility, there is accountability. And I think those two things have to come together. And as I said, I see a balance between local officials, state officials, where state helps to define the rules of accountability and the locals define how they get the job done.
The typical traditional model has been ADA-based?
Yes.
So this is ADA plus?
Well,
rudimentary knowledge for
basic,
us,
yeah,
to follow.
It's you're still funded on a per student basis, and then you get additional supplements if for those who come from poverty, for those who are English language learners and for foster youth. And the reason that the governor says the districts will get extra money for those three groups is because there are many additional challenges that children from those conditions have that school districts need to address in addition to the basic education.
So those from the higher socioeconomic strata just don't get the bonus plan.
They don't get the bonus plan, but they get an allegedly a higher target of revenue once this model is fully funded. Now, when I said that I was thinking pretty positive about this budget, keep in mind that this budget only grows by 1.65% for next year in the state of California, which is relatively modest growth. But for an industry who has been cut 23% in the last 4 years, a 1.65% increase looks pretty positive. So it's all relative, Brian. It's all relative.
Oh, I'm thinking of other business sectors that if they were just 23% off where they were 4 years ago, they'd take it in a heartbeat and run all the way to the bank.
There are some that would.
Yeah, yeah. So it's an interesting dichotomy, I would guess, for anybody at the state level to try to make a consistent plan that really is applicable across the state, because you do have so many different geographic areas and
yes.
so many different economic areas that trying to level that thing out has got to be a nightmare.
I think that's one of the problems that the state of California has. We are so diverse demographically, geographically, and the needs of Sacramento City school districts versus the districts in parts of Humboldt County extremely rural are obviously far different.
Yeah, school buses, as you are wont to
use. As we have talked
use.
About.
Yes.
Yes, indeed.
It's 3:30.
This is Fred Van Fleck, Eureka City School Superintendent. Exciting new things are happening in our district next year, reducing our kinder through third grade class size to 23-1, eliminating our combination classes, and the reopening of Winship Middle School. Remember, we are the largest district on the North Coast, allowing us to have the most diverse course in extracurricular offerings. Enrollment is happening now. Please stop by the district office across from Eureka High School or visit the website at eurekacityschools.org.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times, 3:35. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Gary Eagles, Humboldt County Superintendent of Schools and Education, the school building and the education.
The building and the inside. Education programs inside, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Stupid question. How many kids have to ride a school bus to make the school bus viable to run?
Wow, that's a good question, and I haven't got the foggiest idea.
Okay.
But let's look at it this way. If you're funded based on the number of kids that actually get to school, it becomes very critical. Every one of those kidlins is worth anywhere between $5,000 and $6,000, depending upon if you're looking at state's basic funding or any supplemental funding coming in. So not every district drives the big buses. The big buses hold about, 64 kids or so? But I can tell you that every bus that runs in Humboldt County is needed. And that's one of the things about the state budget, Brian, that is a problem. And that is the governor has recognized that transportation is important. And so he's basically saying whatever transportation dollars you get in 12-13, you'll continue to get. Now, that in and of itself is nice. But because that program has been underfunded for a long time, I'd like to have some cost of living adjustment added to that over
just
the years.
Just drive to Oregon. Buy your diesel up there.
Yeah, if we could afford the trip up. But see, that's what...
45 cents less a gallon.
Is that right?
Yesterday.
Well, wow, 45 cents less.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you.
Sorry, didn't want to screw your momentum up, but
just trying to think
you kind of staggered on that one, aren't you? Yeah. Fuel truck. Think fuel truck.
Think fuel truck. But, you know, I those are the kinds of tweakings that I think we want to have. The other one that I'm concerned about is career tech education here locally. Under the governor's plan, Humboldt County would actually realize only about half the amount of money that it currently gets just in the regional occupation programs areas that were funded, not to mention the other vocational programs that districts run. So career tech education, vocational education, as it's been called in the past, could be underfunded, undersupported under this plan. And so we're going to pull on that a little bit with the governor.
40 or 50 years ago, was that shop? Was that home economics?
Yeah.
That kind of stuff?
Yeah, that's what we call
the
auto
shop and.
Yeah, what's different now is the reason they call it, they reference it more like career tech education is because there's a real concerted effort to have those classes actually prepare kids for the world of work, not just hobbyist kinds of activities. So you might have an introductory woodshop program that would be learning the tools, learning safety, learning how to glue wood together, how to cut straight corners and that sort of thing. But the courses after that introductory class are the CTE, the career tech ed. They actually train to industry standards so that kids can leave high school and actually having a marketable skill.
So that's the
distinguishing difference between what we might have thought about as in home ec or the way woodshop used to be versus today's culinary arts for the food service industry or the cabinet making for the woodshop. There's real direct career application.
But those classes aren't necessarily a springboard to go to a JC or a vocational school.
Well, no, actually they could be. And one of the nice things about it is over the years, we've had the opportunity to align a lot of the courses. So, for example, students who take some of the advanced automotive programs in high school here actually get advanced placement at the community college when they go on. It's called articulation, and we have it in that program. We are moving toward the culinary arts, where the kids in high school will get the hands-on kitchen preparation, food preparation experience in high school, and then they'll get the food service management classes at the community college and then come out with certificates in the hospitality industry.
So that would really team up, say, you management, if it happened to be hotel management, to go to a UNLV or the equivalent.
Oh, absolutely.
With something equivalent to college prep classes?
Yes. Some of them that we've articulated the classes with actually do get dual credit, high school and college credit. Not in all areas, but we're moving toward more of those. And certainly we've had a lot of our kids go through some of our preparation programs and get accepted to places like the Culinary Institute of America and walk in with some very high-level sophisticated skills. I would turn to our construction trades program, too, that we do, you know, that where our kids in the high school program actually build houses. I know there's been a lot of press this year on the energy-efficient home that Dave Enos in his McKinleyville program built up there in McKinleyville this past couple of years. Students did a brilliant job of incorporating all the latest and greatest, as it were, relative to environmental energy efficiency. And so those kids can take those skills and go right out in the marketplace. And many of our local major contractors today, both independent and larger companies, are former students of that program going all the way back when Rob Bodie started that program some 27, 28 years ago.
Boy, does that make you sound old.
It just tells you I've been around a long time.
Throw that one out there, yeah. No.
But that's one of those ideas, though, that good, solid career tech education leads to economic development for a community.
So what happened to the ag program and the forestry program and some of those that were the early ones for vocational ed through the high schools? Have they been dissipated, refocused? Was there not enough demand to warrant those?
Well, it's a combination of all of those. The forestry programs did, in fact, disappear. The ag programs are still alive in pieces. Eureka has a program, for example. Fortuna has a program. Ferndale has a program. In Eureka, we're actually talking about advancing aquaculture as a different part of the ag sequence of courses. And I see some real strong possibilities in merging in that new venture area here. So, yes, they've declined. Yes, they've shifted emphasis. But no, to some degree, they're still here to stay, and they're just going to look a little bit different in the future.
KINS, News and Information Times, 343. We'll return with more from Gary Eagles.
Sacred Heart Church invites you to join us every Sunday for our liturgical celebrations. Saturday, 4 p.m., Confessions. 5 p.m. Sunday's Vigil Mass. 7 p.m. Spanish Mass, and on Sundays, 9:30 Morning Mass and 12:30 Spanish Mass. Come and celebrate with us.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 3:45.
We're back. Shall I move the clock a little closer for you?
Nah, it's the glare now, man.
You're sure the numbers are big enough?
It's too close. Well, knock that off, will you? Oh, geez.
I told you we'd have fun.
Yeah. Looking at the budget, looking at the state of education for Humboldt County now, Gary, I know certainly the rural areas have got more challenges than most of the urban ones. I mean, you may not need to have a cop at every school, but other than that, there's a lot of other challenges that are out there. With this budget, do you see that there's a potential to resurrect the categorical funding in a couple of years and specifically direct, or do you think that is kind of something that's come and gone?
If the governor has his wish, the majority of categorical programs will be gone for quite a long time, with the exception of just the core ones that remain. And because his vision is a multi-year vision, while he would want to launch this new formula distribution model next year, it actually predicts between 7 and 8 years to be fully funded. So he's actually creating meaning every district will have a target amount of funding to get to. The deficits would be restored, the deferrals would be canceled, and at some point in the future, we would be made whole again, is the vision. But this is what they call a sea change. He would have to enlist the support of the state legislature, not only the ones that are in there now, but subsequent ones who might be elected in the next 2 or 4 years, could even be another governor that would be committed to this too. Even if Governor Brown were to run again, he would still be slightly shy of the target. So we are talking about committing state legislative leaders, our elected officials, to a long course of action that, frankly, once in place, couldn't be easily shifted again.
Did the same philosophy play out through the 13, 14, 15, 16, the four-year schools and the two-year post-high schools?
The community college is dramatically affected, too, in this process, in the sense that they want to have the community colleges responsible for adult education and take that away from K-12s. That's another area, frankly, where I'm not sure that that's the best move, and I would certainly defer to President Kathy Smith and her folks out at College of the Redwoods and about whether or not she sees that as an advantage. One of the problems with shifting adult education to community colleges is that it tends to be more expensive to run the programs at the community college. Also, they're less centralized, or they're more centralized, I should say, whereas adult education programs offered by high schools, that's a decentralized model. It's a little closer to the customer. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. But adult education is one of those, it really doesn't fit nice and neatly into either K-12 or higher ed. But we are talking about adult basic education skills. We're talking about English as a second language acquisition. And personally, I actually think that that serves better the K-12, certainly the it's kind of like an advanced high school focus than it is in the community colleges. But we'll have to see.
I was thinking, as long as the capacity is available, that
true.
If these folks get accustomed to and feel familiar enough with their local junior college, maybe when they're done, they keep going.
Now, that would certainly be an argument in favor of it. That's true.
But I don't know, I mean, that doesn't certainly offset a dollar sign. I mean,
no, well, one of the things the governor said is that while I want to shift this responsibility to the community colleges, I'll give community colleges the opportunity to contract back with the high school districts that were currently operating the program. So, you know, as I said, he's thought about a lot of things. His staff has thought a lot about this plan. And of all the things I've seen over the years come out of the Sacramento, this is the most well-integrated, thought-out plan. Irrespective of whether you agree with it or not, it's pretty tight in terms of A to Z and thinking of all the exceptions.
I wonder how many years it took to come up with.
Well, according to the people in the back office, they said they started writing the language, the trailer bill, a year and a half ago.
tough to replicate that on an annual basis.
That's right. That's how monumental a change that this actually is. It has tremendous impact on the education code.
Well, we'll see how it pushes away from the dock. We ought to know in about two and a half months or so with a May revise.
Yes, we will know more.
If this is one
that can hold. Absolutely, we'll know a lot by May.
Thanks for coming by.
Thanks for having me. Go out and enjoy a sunny afternoon.
See you tomorrow morning.